Okay, let's get down to business. I imagine that most of you are familiar with the basic postulates of Theta Mest. If you're not, they're fairly well covered in the book. But I would like to give you just a little bit more on that, give you a quickie review. The reason why we consider Theta as independent of the physical universe is not so much because vast amounts of evidence say that the physical universe cannot contain Theta, but by compartmenting it out, we can regard it without getting cluttered up on the subject of electrogravitic magnetic impulses. Now, if we just say, well, it's outside the physical universe and so on, it has its own laws, we open up wide open speculation and understanding regarding it. The second that we say this is physical energy of some sort, which is different than other physical energies we have so far encountered, we have a tendency to assign to it certain physical energy properties. As far as I can tell, at this time, Theta, as an energy, has very little relationship to the physical energies which we know about. Very little. And where it begins to partake of physical energy manifestations is in the organism, which is, after all, partly a physical energy organism, and additionally, after it has become interbulated with the physical universe. Then it begins to take on certain magnetic properties, it certain behaves in certain ways. But up above that point, we regard this as this energy, and we find that this energy does something very weird and very strange. Right away, when we look at it, we see affinity, reality, and communication. We define what reality is as an agreement on what exists. We define affinity as something which is cohesive, but it seems to be a little bit more than cohesive. And communication, well, it's a transfer of something, but electricity doesn't do this. Nothing in atomic and molecular phenomena compares across the boards with Theta and ARC. We're out, immediately, out of the standard laws of energy. And as long as we stay out of them and regard Theta as Theta, we're in good, safe, solid ground. Although apparently we're on no ground at all. I mean, let's get rid of the concept that man is mud. And let's say that there is this energy which is motivating him. And that this energy coming into collision with physical energy, physical universe in space and time, produces this strange thing that people have been trying to understand for a long time, the life organism. And by so regarding it, which is a scientific test above all other scientific tests, we're achieving results. We are predicting answers, and when we look to find out if those are applicable, we find out they are. We are, in other words, equipped now with the Theta Mest theory to do a larger and better piece of extrapolation, derivation, than man has been able to do before in the field of the humanities. Theta Mest came into being very shockingly with a realization one fine day that I was standing on a stage and I didn't know what I was talking about. I was standing up there with my mouth wide open and all of a sudden I didn't know. Everything was going along fine in individual Dianetics. Oh, I had everything nailed down. First dynamic, good shape. Second dynamic, good shape. We're getting along fine. And one day in California, I stood up to give a lecture on the subject of political Dianetics. Political Dianetics, that was easy. It was all licked. The whole thing. Why, heck, we knew how to put states together and everything else. And I stand up on the stage. Good morning. And I'm going to talk this morning on political Dianetics. Now, for Christ's sake, now, wait a minute. Do I know anything about this? I'm saying to myself. Well, sure, that's easy. Societies arrange themselves on the tone scale. That's descriptive. That's just descriptive. It doesn't give you the dynamics of the society. What is the third dynamic? My God. That was last September. And by October, I realized that I had become so engrossed in the first and second dynamic in Dianetics that I hadn't followed the curve all the way back to 1930, and the original reason to enter the field in 1930 was simply that thought had not been isolated as an energy. What is the energy of thought? My whole concentration then, studying atomic molecular phenomena, was where in the field of atomic molecular phenomena does thought lie? And I very successfully discovered that it didn't lie there and couldn't lie there, as far as I was concerned, because memory could not be stored by any known means. It was all right for somebody in Keokuk or Vienna to sit there. There was to it, and this was the way it all worked out. So, of course, he missed the boat on ARC, because ARC doesn't compute very well when you look at the tooth and claw world. But there's this tooth and claw world of all of these various species interlocking, fighting, interacting, and way up here at the top supporting something. But we'll be supporting something. Man has ceased to be comestible. He is not looked upon by any species except a toothless tiger or a blind shark or something of the sort that hasn't got any more sense. He isn't looked upon as a comestible. He is mistaken for one very often. But most animals, and even fish, if you get down below, you'll notice that they shy away too. They get very bold and then they say, "Oh man." We are not popular with the animal kingdoms.
The crabs in the Gulf of Mexico sure haven't learned that.
Well, I wish you'd speak to them. All right, your lower forms, of course, unreasoning. But as we come up along the line, we're getting more and more and more up into the level. Now, we're probably going forward and going to evolve into a new... We probably are evolving into a new gradient species, and it'll probably evolve into a higher one. And each time, the test of the organism will be, how much more messed can it change? How much more messed that it can it change in order to, in the long run, support more theta? That's really the test of a theta-messed organism. And we'll come out here to some time when somebody's out here building a new planet to go around the sun that was manufactured yesterday, and we will have about the level of evolution, which evidently theta is tending toward. It's a pretty high goal. We should realize then, just with this little sketch of the subject, that we are dealing with something which is not just, as a matter of fact, you can explain it to your pre-clears if you want to, on the basis, well, you know, for thousands of years, man believed he had a human soul. And then for about 100 years, he figured out he didn't have a human soul. And boy, look what happened to the world during those 100 years. All these wars and everything all got torn up and so forth. Well, now, theta is just really the realization and computation on the basis that he does have a soul, and this is part of the operating mechanism. You catch one quick and say it real quick and real fast, and you save yourself a lot of explanation. But that's a heck of a long way from the story. Actually, man's been trying to find this thing called a human soul for about as many years as he is old. The second he started to reason, he figured out there was something there he didn't quite know about. Now, theta has an interesting... Here you'd say is pure theta. Now, here's theta as it comes into an organism. Now, here's more... It's more into the organism. It's more into mist. Now, it's more into mist. Now, it's really crushed in the mist down here. And it's dead. Here's 2-0. Here's 0. And here's 4-0. That's all there is to the tone scale. Now, ARC, as the component parts, begin to get dissonant. You know what I mean by dissonant? I wish I had a musical instrument here. I could show you what I was talking about. Fast. You take something which is dissonant. It makes a discord with something else. You're getting a discord down here, 2-0. But it's not enough of the discord to really shatter things. It's gone off of sine wave, and it's rather over toward noise. But as the theta gets more and more into mest, it gets more and more irregular in its vibrations until at last its vibrations are such that it nulls itself out. It damps itself out, and that's the end of it. It isn't vibrating anymore. It's dead. So you could say it comes down to here and it won't vibrate in mest anymore. It kicks itself out, and evidently then and only then can cohese back up here again. So you've got a condition here of, here is the band of recognition that something is threatening loss. 1-5. Something at 1-1. Something is threatening loss, but we don't quite dare do anything as a frontal attack to it. Here we get a recognition that loss is liable to take place, which is fear. Down here, loss has taken place, grief. Loss has taken place, and I recognize it, apathy. Up here, you just get your grading scales of sanity, where you've got, in other words, up along the line, if you just keep this in mind, this is your background derivation of the tone scale. Here you've got infinity, reality, communication, vibrating in such in mess that has damped itself out. It can no longer exist in mess. But in here, it still is of a vibration which permits it to coexist with mess. It can exist with mess. And you get it up here at such a pure vibration that it can't exist with mess. And there you have the human soul, the spirit, so forth, I suppose. My people have tried to account for this in a thousand different ways. Exactly what it does. Certainly I'm not going to go overboard when not even the boys in Rome know what it is up there. So anyway, there roughly would be the pattern on the tone scale. Now if you figure this out as three musical notes. Here are three musical notes being struck as a nearly perfect chord. Here are three musical notes being struck with just a little discord. Just a little bit off, but not too unpleasant. Here they're being struck with just a little more off. Here they're being struck in such a discord that you've actually got noise when you hit them. That's anger. Here they're struck with a discord which would be not unpleasant to hear, unless you thought about it. It struck very long a time, it would be pretty darned unpleasant. It's damped out. Musicians here, you can tell you what kind of these chords are. Down here, why, this thing has gotten to be one of these smooth, flat. It's so far out that it just doesn't make sense. It's just flat. And down here, it's gone completely. It is not a chord. Now, here's what you consider pitch, the inner pitch of three notes. As you come up here, you have volume. The volume's the difference between fear and terror. Fear and terror don't occupy two different positions on the tone scale. They are just more volume. Terror is more volume of fear. Grief is more volume of being sad or being a little hopeless. Or deep apathy doesn't mean deep pitch, but it means more volume of being, that's all. Now you've got those three conditions as you have in music. Pitch, volume, and quality.
Pathos.
Yeah. Pitch, volume, and quality. You have pitch, volume, and quality on the tone scale. You keep that in mind, you can practically derive a tone scale. You know about what this guy's going to do. For instance, if you had enough volume on anger, you take three musical notes and you start building them up, and they're in disharmony with each other. And if you build them up to a high enough volume, it'll start breaking things. It'd start destroying eardrums and so forth, whereas you could build a real musical note up along that level, it wouldn't have the same effect. Now, don't know how many of you know about sympathetic vibration. It's an interesting experiment that they love to do in a physics laboratory. They take a tuning fork, usually a wooden one, which puts out a very low note, and it's sitting in a resonator and in a box here, and they take another tuning fork over here, and you strike tuning fork A, and it goes bong, and then damp it, and you will find the tuning fork B, which you haven't touched, is going bong, same note, if they are both the same note. But if this is a different note, you hit this, and I won't go into harmonics, but you hit this note and then damp it out, that one is not going to be vibrating. But if you hit this with enough volume, you could theoretically force this thing into doing some kind of an action. You could actually force it with wave volume into doing something, but it would not be the corresponding note, and it wouldn't have any great volume to it. Sympathetic vibration. Bong, and this one without being touched goes bong. Let's set up a person over here, and let's pretend he's a tuning fork. He is vibrating at 1.5. Let's make it obvious. And so somebody needles him a bit more, and he starts going 1.5 a little bit harder. Then he starts going 1.5 a little bit harder. The next thing you know, he sets up a sympathetic vibration in this guy of 1.5. But what is it that's 1.5 in this fellow? It's his reactive mind level engram, which says anger. And that is the key of restimulation. There is how one person keys in another person. Sympathetic vibration is just a demonstration of how it occurs. All right, we set this person down here, and this person has grief. Boo-hoo-hoo, and a lot of volume on the grief. Eventually, the engrams in the bank on the subject of grief, and this person will key in. You put up enough grief on this person will eventually key in on grief. Same way with apathy, same way anywhere up the line. There is corresponding moods. What you're getting here is an ARC and actually a MEST co-vibration, which, here's this person. You can take a whole mass of people. They are perfectly calm, and all of a sudden, from some other source, something hits the theta of the group, and you get mass hysteria. Bong! The group theta revibrates into everybody, and boom, they all go down into mass hysteria. And you have these strange mob reactions and so on. Mobs can exist, by the way, at any level of the tone scale. Somebody cheering with tremendous acclaim, so on, being cheered with it, is being cheered with a vibration on this level. Now, theta fits easily into MEST up here. They go together very well. They are interoperative above 2.0. They have an attraction for each other. They go along just fine. There is something in theta, and there's something in MEST which makes them go together. And makes them work together. Above 2.0. And there's something about being below 2.0 which makes them want to work apart. Furthermore, there is something below 2.0 about vibration. The vibration is so different that it is antipathetic toward the vibration up here. N theta, in great volume, will attack theta and try to drive it out. They will smash against each other and try to repel each other, if you can imagine that reaction. Here's theta, here's N theta, here's theta. You get this N theta to vibrating very heavily, get it up in volume, and all of a sudden, boom, it'll knock this theta out. You show any group enough theta to disinterbulate the N theta, which is that group, and that group will come up on the tone scale. But you show a heavily N theta group, very interbulated group, a little bit of theta, and watch what happens to that theta. Boom! But fast. Theta has to pretty well safeguard itself to keep this from happening. It'll get interpolated every time because of this. Here's just volume, you see. You've got a big volume of N theta, and it'll knock out this theta. In other words, there is a counterattack going on. Actually, it isn't a counterattack. It's a sympathetic vibration. It's a natural consequence of what happens on this vibrational scale. But it's easier to see if you say in terms of N theta attacks theta. It's easier to see, yeah. The two will attack each other. There's the mechanism of depth. After the organism has too much, down the line, boom, out they go, and what little theta remains in the organism will go on out. But also, this stuff can evidently free itself, too, and come back together again. We have here, then, the modus operandi in vignette of human behavior. That's about what it does. Communication, reality, affinity. When this stuff starts to reverse polarity, gets down the scale, you get reverse polarity on affinity and reality, and what happens to communication? You get reverse polarity on communication, reality, what happens to affinity? They're all going to go in the same bundle. It's actually a triangle that we're working with, and this triangle becomes more and more antipathetic. You can't, in other words, take theta and suddenly remove communication from the bundle and say, now we're going to work on these two. They will not work. They're not interoperative. They will interpolate as a result. They're not separable. You should know, then, these basic facts about this, because you, as an auditor, will find yourself really up against it. in some case or other. If you don't realize that what you're doing is taking, in the majority of the cases that you'll process, a very, very small amount of theta and attacking one hell of a quantity of N theta with it. If you don't realize that, if you don't know this basic operation, you're liable to overlook some of these prime principles and suddenly invest, just like that, all of the theta present. And of course, you're just inviting the interpolation of the remaining theta on the case. You try to take some guy who has so much stuff in the bank that he couldn't possibly listen to it. Or maybe it's so jammed up in some fashion or other that he can't listen to it. And you work with phrases to turn on his sonic. And you watch him get more and more and more and more interpolated, more nervous. Well, that's computational. Sure, he doesn't dare listen to this stuff, so it doesn't turn on. But it happens mechanically. It happens mechanically. You try to drive a case which is instinctively resisting the investment of what little theta it has. Try to drive this case into a large body of N theta where it'll hang up, and this case will fight back, will resist you mechanically without any slightest attention to the commands in the engram. Just automatically and mechanically do so. So here, and what we're dealing with at LOST, is the mechanical aspects of processing as different from the semantic aspects of processing. All of you know the semantic aspects of processing well enough. You don't have to go over that ground. But on the mechanical aspects, there's a lot to be learned. It just works out that a case that has this much N theta on it and that much theta, it will behave in this fashion regardless of the semantic command of the engrams. The words, the phrases, the case will have a certain behavior. It will behave in a certain direction, mechanically, regardless of the content of the engrams. Now, that is a very, very different shift, apparently, on Dianetics. It is not a shift, but an extension, because the semantic content is quite important, definitely. But standing behind it and having greater importance is the mechanical aspect, the theta-n theta ratio of a case. That is more important to understand and to know. Because that is uniform in every case. And that determines, really, the position on the tone scale. The reason you didn't have this before is because it couldn't be codified for delivery. It wasn't sufficiently codified. So you didn't have it. That doesn't make it any the less valid. Here is your big jump. This is accessibility. How can you get into communication with somebody who is down here with his communication vector or factor of his theta in a complete disturbed condition? How are you going to get communication with this person? Pretty hard to do. You're going to fish around and look for "I'm not going to pay any attention to you"? Yeah, I'm afraid that you could look for a long time for phrases like that, and you just seriously interpolate this case. That's all that would happen. You just get the fellow more and more interpolated. Whereas, if you suddenly realize that this is the manifestation that you are getting from this case, merely derives from his position on the tone scale and is mechanical. You realize that. You will also realize a lot of ways to resolve the case. That turns your attention then from fishing around for phrases, turns your attention into fishing up theta, wherever you may find it. It turns your attention around to giving the guy enough theta in present time. It turns your attention around to the real reasons why there has to be an auditor. It turns your attention to various other factors which perhaps it has not been sufficiently concentrated on before. Because you have, all of you, met cases here and there that you couldn't do much for. You had a hard time working with. And after you'd worked with them a while, no real result was achieved. Well, I can assure you that if you pay attention to the mechanical aspects of processing, you won't meet those cases again. You will meet them, but you'll resolve them. No matter how much he kicks and he says, "I'm not going to believe in Dianetics until I run a prenatal engram." You people believe in prenatals, don't you? And he says, "I got to run a prenatal engram. I got to do this and I got to do that." You'll process him where he's supposed to be processed. Even though it depresses him to find out that you think he's at 0.2 on the tone scale. If he's at 0.2 on the tone scale, he can profit by a rise up the tone scale. Now, the other aspect of this is that derivationally, you will be able to discover about what you can do with a case without even really looking at the chart. As you begin to use the chart, if you keep looking at the fundamental behind the chart, the fundamental postulates, and you understand those thoroughly, you aren't going to need a chart. You can figure out what this person would do about this and about that and about something or other. You'll know. You just look at certain aspects of his behavior and you'll know what the rest of them are and you'll know what his intentions are. Okay, I don't know. Supposing we take about a 10-minute breather and I'll talk to you for another half an hour or so and I'll clean up this basic theory on the basis of the drives, the goal and the purpose of theta and n theta. I want to tell you something about the goals and purposes of theta. And I guess MEST. I'm not so sure about MEST on goals and purposes, and about theta. Because MEST is in the losing valence so far. And it seems that MEST has a primary law it operates on that the physicists are very fond of called the conservation of energy. This thing is worn so thin and the nap is off of it so beautifully that it certainly doesn't need much explanation. Unless somebody wants to come out and explain it. But just running everything down to say energy conserves itself and that's the end of that, that's nonsense. You can extend the conservation of energy and have a lot of fun with this concept. It is such a holy, holy, holy of concepts that hardly anybody does much about it. As a matter of fact, Einstein, last year, or about a year and a half ago, put together some very new and very revolutionary theories in a mathematical form, and when he got clear down to the bottom of the line, then his method of saying this is true was saying, and so you see, this compares with this is the conservation of energy. He didn't further advance particularly conservation of energy, but all these theories were true because they came up against the conservation of energy. This is all right. I mean, they can do a lot of things like this in the field of MEST. But conservation of energy is about the furthest frontier they've gone. They want to add to this, they say, conservation of energy. This would be a limited concept. There's actually conservation of matter. Matter tends to conserve itself one way or the other. Compounds tend to go into the most stable forms and all this sort of thing. In other words, elements tend to go into the most stable compounds, try to conserve themselves. There seems to be a conservation of space. Space is space, somewhat on the order of Gertrude Stein's, a rose is a rose is a rose is a rose. Space is space is space. Until somebody finds out what space is, that's really about all you can say about it. It's an empty hole in which there isn't anything until something is. You can derive that space is a vibration. That's gruesome. You can also figure out that space has to exist only in the presence of time, that time cannot exist without space, that space cannot exist without time. The two are interlocked, so they're both the same thing. I don't know how this hangs up on the fact that space and time cannot exist without energy, but it possibly does. We've got matter, energy, space, and time, the first letters of these making up MEST. Well, we're savvy enough about this to go out there and make ourselves a very fine automobile. And we can split the breeze at 80 miles an hour. And if you ever give it a thought, we're certainly conquering space and time with energy. Moving ourselves, removing ourselves from one point in space. Very funny. You start thinking it over and it becomes very mysterious. But very few people think it over. They merely go out and get in the car and drive off. That's the safest way to do. You start thinking over this. Who is God? Why is man here? Where is man going? As a matter of fact, the number of ARC breaks that you can pick up on religion, because you see, ARC in religion, does God love you or doesn't he? Can God actually talk to me, or can I actually talk to God, or is he listening? As far as reality is concerned, people say, you'd better believe in God or we'll bust your head in and send you to hell. We don't mean to enforce any realities on you, but... And then the atheist comes around and he says, you know very well God doesn't exist, that it's just mud. Of course, he wouldn't be inhibiting any reality on it. The multitude of ARC breaks, in other words, which you can find in a pre-clear on the eighth dynamic, Supreme Being, Creator, postulated, world comes from someplace, and it's a prime mover unmoved, and that's that. Let's kind of leave it at that. Because when they start fooling around with it without knowing many of its natural laws, they spin people.
How does that differ from the seventh?
The seventh is the theta universe. That's theta energy. Well, let's go all out and postulate a supreme being who made the seventh and the sixth. That's just throwing a curve. It isn't necessarily true, you see, that the supreme being has anything to do beyond being the entity. You see? I mean, you see right away. You're proving my point beautifully. We're talking obvious, but we're not sure. But it just seems to work out fairly well that man has been very happy for a long time to postulate the existence of a supreme being. Well, that's fine. So what did the supreme being, known as the Creator, all right, what did he create? Well, we can say he created the physical universe. Well, then is he the theta universe? Or has this got anything to do with it? We'd be unjustified in saying that the supreme being is the theta universe. We would say that the theta universe could be another universe, like maybe there's dozens of universes, who knows? Boy, can you get balled up on this subject in a hurry. But we are aware of the fact that by using the seventh dynamic of theta and the sixth dynamic of the physical universe, we're aware of they exist, if only for this reason. An engram is a collision between the seventh and the sixth. A secondary is a parting of the seventh and the sixth. Loss. Secondary. Too close a collision. And we know that that is our basic source of all this unreason and everything. Seventh and sixth. So we know they exist. But we are not justified in saying the supreme being is right in there with the seventh. Any more than we're justified with saying he's in with the sixth. But man has assumed for a long time that he was, so we'll go along until we know something about it. Now we go right over into MEST, and we find out that things are really just this hazy about MEST. Except we're used to handling it. We've agreed on an awful lot of things about MEST. But boy, is it hazy. Space. Time. So you send your pre-clear back down the time track. Obviously he's moving, isn't he? He's going someplace, isn't he? But he's not going into the past, is he? He's going into a record of time, not time. Therefore, all the theta that's in existence must be the theta in present time. Now we try to tie up time, theta time and space time, and we find out that that's possibly the bridge between the two. And you can go into more cockeyed postulates, just as the physical scientist has been going into them for a long time in trying to explain energy, space, matter, so forth. Oh, heck, he'll come out every few years, the physical scientist comes and say, well, you see, it's all stored in punched protein molecules. And then he goes on with this tremendous extrapolation of how these energy waves are stored in punched protein molecules or something that's gruesome. Matter of fact, that theory didn't come out till later. That's a refinement. But the existing theories of 1930 were perfectly workable to anyone who did not know atomic and molecular phenomena. But the second that you looked over this specialized field of energy, you found out quickly that there wasn't a form of energy small enough to act as memory storage. That the human body did not contain minute enough divisions to contain these things we knew as physical energy. Even when we tried to extrapolate on up the spectrum and postulate unheard of shortnesses of wavelength and so on, at infinitesimal bits of energy, micro-urges and things like that, and we still found out that the human mind can't do it. So instead of saying, we must now cancel out the human being as an organism, which has been the scientific method so far, we said there must be something else here that we don't know about. There must be something else operative, rather than standard atomic molecular phenomena as is related to the physical universe. Well, it had to take the whole trip all the way back to 1930 to come on forward again. It didn't take very long, because an enormous amount of data had been accumulated along the line, which merely needed to be cohesed. As a matter of fact, it only took 4 days of very intensive discussion and thought on the thing to get back to where it started originally and bring it on forward and find the third dynamic. But the second the third dynamic was located, it was understood that an organism, a social organism, a group, had its own energy. Second, it was realized it had its own energy. This could be demonstrated. Why, it was necessary then to find out how did this apply to the first and second dynamics. Well, we went back to first and second dynamics, and they picked up remarkably through the application of theta mist. They, all of a sudden, in types of processing that had before had been very difficult to communicate, they were easy to communicate. Furthermore, it was possible to figure out new ways of doing it by the application of the theta mesh theory. Most importantly, it resolved many of the problems on the third dynamic so that we knew something about organizations of man and even down to as finite a number of two, the auditor and the preclear. They form a group. Why is it they can process each other at all? Why is it that it takes an auditor? Well, it does. And there is, on the theta mesh postulate, you merely postulate the fact that here you have a group, and where you have a group, you have a quantity of theta, which is interior and exterior to the group. We don't care, but it nevertheless exists there as a group. It's demonstrably so. Well, here we have phenomena which is not embraceable by the atomic fission boys. They can certainly raise hell with Hiroshima, but they can't take a single guy out of a spin bin except in a coffin. This is the difference. Primary difference that we're running into then is we're working with a basic postulate which refines the humanities quite markedly and puts them into a predictable state of affairs instead of such an unpredictable state. Theta, of course, can be said to be an energy, and you can add, of its own universe, which, when impinged upon the matter energy in space and time of the physical universe, will create an organism known as life. Now, that would be pretty basic as a definition. Awful simple. You can say the component parts of theta mest, of theta, which we now know, are, its component factors are affinity, reality, and communication. It seems to break down into these three manifestations. And when these three factors of theta impinge themselves on mest, we have computation. And until that happens, we don't have computation. It takes a uniting of theta with mest to bring about computation, which is to say, understanding. Now, you can take affinity, reality, and communication, impinge it on matter, energy, existing in space and time, and you will get any and all methods of computation, i.e. mathematics, that exist today. You can actually derive that one. You can sit down, scratch your head over it, and figure out, well, there's this kind of a mathematics, and then there'd be that kind of a mathematics, and something or other, and something or other. Sure, they're all there. Calculus, and theory of equations, and arithmetic, and all the rest of it. Which immediately points up, I won't go into this because that is something of more interest to a mathematician, and makes my own head ache. But the three points of affinity, reality, communication, when united in the mest, demonstrate up comprehension, understanding, computation, You would make a mistake if you said that reality and agreement were also understanding and computation. It takes all three of these things to make understanding. Shorten one of them, and the understanding becomes unbalanced. Shorten two of them, it becomes very unbalanced. Shorten all three, and there's no computation. Now, as these three elements go into messed heavily, too heavily, on an interpolative level, comprehension and understanding go, and you merely get the magnetic super association and so forth of messed itself, and you get the organism applying the only law that messed really follows, the law of force. Force is the weapon used by that organism which is very interpolated with messed. Force. From 2.0 down, you have the organism using force rather than reason. Here's the punishment drive theory. Here's the theory that, so they won't work, so whip them. And if they won't work then, kill them. That'll show them. Now there's mess really backing up against theta. Now on the other side, we have theta coming on into mess. And theta can exist as reason fairly well down to 2.0, but then breaks up into force. But theta has a trick, and you should know about this trick. Theta itself does not have force. Now, that's a very funny thing. If it was a physical energy, a physical universe energy, naturally it would have a force component. But it doesn't have a force component. It's spooky stuff. when we really get down to rock bottom and take a look at this stuff, it's all right to say grandly, theta, mass, so forth, it's all solved. But you get down there and take a look at it, and it says, until it comes into mess, what it's doing, we're not sure at all. But when it first gets there, it starts running a cycle. It goes in very heavily into mess, gets thoroughly interpolated, kicks the free theta back out again, comes back and charges into mess again, gets interpolated, gets kicked out again. But what's it doing every time? It goes in there and it gets a computation and then comes out with the computation. It keeps learning the laws of messed. That's right. And it learns them so that it can turn messed against messed. And that is how we progress. We turn messed against messed. The laws of messed against messed. We learn something that is the reason, the natural law behind a certain behavior of the physical universe, and then we use it against the physical universe. Theta itself has no force. It merely has comprehension, computation, reason, retention of reason. Here's an example of it. This, by the way, extrapolates all the way on out. You can postulate that no organization, no organism ever went together without being suddenly crushed into messed too hard. And then it withdraws itself. And then it has learned something about the natural laws of this mess that it was trying to conquer, and it goes back into the mess again with those natural laws. The cycle of death and life is an organism cycle from organism to organism. Evidently, theta goes into an organism, creates an organism, interpolates, death ensues. But something happens there. There is a sort of a physical line. There is a sort of a physical organism line. By the unending stream of protoplasm, we don't even have to step out into theta bodies. We can make this digestible even to a biologist. Because we can say that the theta messed line is carrying along the unending stream of protoplasm which comes down through the ages and is the cycles of life. Here we have the obvious fact that no organism exists here today which doesn't have direct ancestors. Way back sometime or other, there was something happened and we got a steady stream forward of organisms through time and space. And it'll keep on going. Now, that's the unending stream of protoplasm, and we can say that the theta mess is doing this impingement and withdrawal and is carrying along the line of protoplasm, makes another organism, backs out of that organism through death, has learned a little bit more. You could explain this in the basis of the cat habit patterns. The cat has learned it has to do certain things generation to generation. We don't even have an exterior understanding there. It's sort of built-in mechanism. You take a kitten, separate it from its mother at birth, and park it out someplace, and the first thing you know, there sits the kitten washing its face. Habit patterns built in. Genetic patterns, so on. Now, this is very understandable and explainable that way. Additionally, there happens to be, evidently, a theta line, a theta body line, which sort of travels along the side of the protoplasm line. Where there's enough, there's more evidence that says that it's there than there is evidence that says it isn't there. So you favor it a little bit on that side. You find out that here you've got another cycle, which is even more easily explained. The theta body. Here is theta, which has gone into this organism, pulled out, been kicked out by death, and it goes into the next organism. Each time it learns a little bit more. Until we finally got theta very well educated on the subject, and one of two things happens. Either it gets so thoroughly interpolated that it goes, whew, and isn't anymore, or it learns enough so that it can withdraw itself and disinterpolate itself in the organism in one lifetime. And that's Dianetics. It's actually a mechanism for licking death. The reason for death is that organism by organism, the theta has to learn more and more and more about mess. The reason for death is that this organism has now learned all that it can, but it's so thoroughly interpolated that the theta can't do anything more. It hasn't any more force. It's got to withdraw one way or the other from that organism, and so we get death. There's the death cycle. Then we get the birth, growth, decay, death. Birth, growth, decay, death. They have been talking about this since the early days of India. That cycle. All right? We're doing it in one generation. That is one of the reasons why an effort to stop Dianetics would be darn near impossible. It just so happens that the evolution of knowledge and the evolution of life sort of comes up to a point with an organism where it will graduate across that one evolutionary jump. There's an evolutionary span. Somewhere along the line, there's enough facts, enough data is going to get accumulated so theta will learn how to disinterpolate itself in one lifetime. That's Dianetics. And that's really all we're doing. It so happens that organizations behave so clearly like organisms that you get cycles of organizations. And it's actually true. You have 20 people, let us say, and they form a group. They are in agreement as to certain similar goals and purposes. There's an ARC in that group. And the thought would be that if we cleared all those individuals, we would have a cleared group. That's not true. We could clear the group and not clear the individuals, and we'd have a cleared group. Now, this is fortunate, not unfortunate, because if this had to wait upon the eradication of engrams out of everybody on the face of the earth before we could have a world without war, I'm afraid that we would be working for a long time. But fortunately, we don't have to. We can take an organism of organization and set it up in such a way that it is no longer a psychotic organism. And that's what we've discovered in the third dynamic. Group Dianetics won't be out for a long time yet. But the actual truth of the matter is that organizations today, groups today, are psychotics. They are psychotic sponges. I can't think of anything lower on the psychotic level. The sponge. They don't even have nerve lines. They are set up, they haven't got memories. They're so terrifically introverted that their chances of doing anything against the environment as an organism are very slight. Therefore, we have the most efficient groups down in the death band. Armies. Navies. Oh, boy. All they've got to worry about is, what do we blow up next, boys? And so they can be rather efficient organizations. What does a psychotic do? What do we blow up next? Now, doesn't say that you can take a bunch of civilians, take a few lawyers and a couple of engineers, make officers out of them, and take a bunch of boys out of high school, good kids, they having a lot of fun around the hamburger stands and so forth, and all of a sudden we have an organism capable of destroying cities. Yes, you ask any member of that organism, any member, and you say, what do you feel about killing human beings? Oh, I, hell, who wants to kill human beings? Put a gun in his hands as part of that organism, and he goes out and kills human beings. That's a psychotic organism. The sanity of the group is only faintly related to the sanity of the individuals who go to make up the group. That's how rough this Theta mess gets. It is so thoroughly a group that it can be insane regardless of the people who belong to it. It is so thoroughly an organism. It has its own Theta. And that Theta is either interpolated with engrams or this and that, or it's all messed up and disorderly because it doesn't have a purpose. And there's something wrong with it, and it'll go ahead and it'll function in the most blundering and horrible fashion imaginable. What we're doing in Wichita, by the way, is building the second organism of Dianetics. The Theta has had departed out of the other organizations. Theta, by the way, will pull MEST in under it. There is a natural attraction between Theta and MEST. If you put out enough Theta, and MEST will move under it. Rather automatically. It's very strange, but it'll do that. And you interpolate, you put out enough N Theta, and the MEST will move away from it. Or collapse in its vicinity. Just put out a lot of N Theta, and there goes the MEST. Did you ever see a fellow complaining about the fact I never get anything out of life and I never have any lucky breaks? No, everybody else got a lot of lucky breaks, but I never do. And he goes down to a gambling table and throws his buck on the gambling table and loses that too. The MEST moves away from him at great rapidity. Well, the MEST had begun to move away from the research foundations at such a fast rate that they just died. There wasn't anything much he could have done to them. Here, for instance, we're building an organism. Carefully. With malice aforethought, this organism has got to consist of this, 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 and this. And we're going to put in each element at the time it's ready to go in. For instance, it'll probably be 6 weeks or 2 months before a modified nerve line goes into this organization so that you've got a nervous system. In other words, communication lines, they're your nervous system. There's going to be a modified communication system put in Wichita, in about 6 weeks or 2 months, but it's about the earliest it could be put in, and then that probably won't be refined for another 2 or 3 months into a full communication system. This organism is growing, and it had better grow according to plan, because if it stops growing according to plan, if it suddenly gets darted out in some weird direction or other, it's going to start to get another psychotic organization. We can't afford one. Let's be smart this time, and let's make a two-generation race. Two-generation species, whereby in the first generation, it's a very dumb species organism, and in the second one, gets awfully bright, gets efficient. Now, that'd be quite a trick if we could do that. There'd probably be a third foundation before we get through. 10 years from now, this would probably collapse. But right now, she's going ahead very smoothly, because we're paying attention to laws that we know exist concerning Theta in its conquest of MEST. Now, what is the purpose of Theta? The purpose of Theta could be said to be the changing of MEST. You could say it the changing of MEST rather than the conquest of MEST. That way, you take and embrace everything that Theta really does do to MEST, because believe me, there's a lot of Theta doing behind the atom bomb. And all that atom bomb, all they're trying to do, their big article appears in the papers, boy, is our government proud. They have accumulated more explosive power than all the bombs and bullets fired by all sides in World War II and in all the 700 years preceding. In other words, the United States government today has this much explosive power at its disposal. Are they proud? Now, here's Theta, quite illogically or irrationally, saying, boy, can I change MEST. Boom. It's like a little cartoon they had down on the stage at Caltech. I was down there one day and over the side stuff peened up against a curtain. It says, little guy standing there, he's got a little tiny capsule, and he's addressing a room full of scientists, and he says, gentlemen, I have the end product here of all scientific research down through all the generations. In this small capsule, I contain enough explosive to blow up the whole universe. Well, fortunately, Theta doesn't exclusively deal in the lines of that, because if Theta wants to survive, there's still got to be MEST. So there's a definite cycle here of creation and construction. There's a death cycle by which Theta will bring to death certain things, and it will bring certain things to light. Just pure reason tells you that there can't be any creation without destruction. supposing trees had kept growing from the earliest age till now. Boy, this would be a funny-looking world, wouldn't it? And it'd be that deep in piled-up timber. We wouldn't have any place to walk. We couldn't destroy it, supposing we were unable to destroy anything. Well, fortunately, little bugs and woodsmen hasn't spared that tree. And forest fires and things like that keep this debris cleared away. We sit around and say, oh, that's too bad that forest fire swept over this much land. Well, it is. It's too bad. But at the same time, you can't get too sentimental about it, supposing nothing was ever able to destroy that forest. God help us. We could never build a nice new modern building if we didn't tear down the tenement first. So there is destruction as part of the computation of theta. It's changing mess. But the best way it could possibly use to change mess would be to build up and manufacture an organism large enough and powerful enough that the organism itself, through its motivations, could command sufficient of the knowledge of mess to really change mess. That'd be something like man. Man has got the science of physics now, and he's going along pretty well in the science of physics. Naturally, when he starts to think about physics, naturally we drive better automobiles. The big level of production, oh, that's right there along the line of bigger automobiles and bigger buildings and bigger movies and bigger this and more of that and so on. That's all messed activity. We're accumulating mess. We're taking more and more of it from cognizance. And the more we learn about that, yes, the more we will fall away from what you might call the theta universe, if that consists of spiritual considerations. The more we understand of the mess universe, the less likely we are to go researching into the theta universe. But that's not smart either, because an organism would certainly better know what it's composed of. It would certainly better know how to back up into that theta. And that's what we're doing right now, and boy, it's paying dividends. We're backing up against the stuff we are. The organism itself stands as a sort of a crossroads between theta and mess, and it has properties, composite properties, which give it some command over theta as well as over mess. Now, there may be such things as theta perceptics, for instance. There may be a lot of things. Oh, it's fascinating. I mean, hell, Buck Rogers and his conquest of mess is... he's a panty waste compared to what we're doing in our conquest of theta. Because this has frontiers and ramifications that man has just plain never looked at before, that's all. I mean, we're out in the wide, wide world of theta. And you start looking there and you pick up one little pink piece and you say, yeah, huh? Now this little pink piece is, look at it, it's turning white and it belongs right here in the puzzle. That's a fatal gesture. Here you had this big crossword puzzle, and there were pieces scattered around, and these were blue-striped, and these were pinks, and these were brown, and you kept trying to find white pieces to fit in. And every once in a while, when you picked up a piece and looked at it real close, you found it was white, and you could add it into the puzzle, and you were getting all these white pieces in here. And for a while, you didn't realize something was happening, but a horrible thing was happening every time you picked up one of those pieces. Every time you picked up one and fitted it into the puzzle, about 1,000 more showed up out there. So you picked up another one, and 1,000 more showed up. We're definitely in the field of you can win, but it's fun. It's going to take a long time, probably, for man to realize that fully, that as he goes in the direction of theta, he can't win. Just as he has not... He begins to realize every once in a while you read some learned scientific treatise whereby... you read one by some stupid fool that will be saying... Now that man has conquered his environment, and that we understand all there is to know about something or other and something or other, that fellow's just asking for it, because in the next issue of the same journal, somebody will come out and will have found a basic postulate which completely blows open the field of biology or something of the sort, and it extends the knowledge of mess down in this direction. So that when they pick up this piece and find out it's white over here in mess and fit it into the puzzle, they get a bunch more showing up. And a good scientist knows today that as he goes into the world of mess, the more he finds out, the more he's got in front of him to find out, and that he can't win. We haven't yet gone far enough into theta to have this horrible fact smite us this heavily. There are more imponderables about theta today than there were 5 months ago. A little bit more is known about theta today, but there are more imponderables. And we're getting more and more and more and more. It goes on out to the far horizon. All right. So you have your organism. can be a group or it can be just a life organism, and it is composed of theta and mest. Mest itself has an evolutionary chain. Mest evolutes. All these tricky little biochemical products, for instance. That's mest. Only theta organisms could make those products. Mest is being changed. For instance, the way... Well, you take once upon a time here, there was a nice, clean prairie and prairie grasses and prairie flowers, and there were a few buffalo wandering around and a few Indians, and it was all quiet and pastoral. And now look at it. In other words, the change which is taking place is a messed change. And this is a messed evolution that we are going through here, really. Here's space and time and a prairie. Now, those grasses are organisms. Those buffalo were organisms. Man's viewpoint, half the time he considers life organisms as his mess. They're just physical universe as far as he's concerned. He needs them, he takes them. But here you have mess going forward. The bricks in that building, not too long ago, were lying out as part of the messed plane out here in a clay pit. An organism came along and made bricks and built the building. Now that's changing. That's evolving mest. But mest evolves, as I said, even into chemical compounds and this sort of thing. Life organisms, we know about their evolution. And there's another evolution. There's a present time staff of life, you might say, whereby you have up in the chemical and sunlight being put together in such a way that you have life. That's a basic unit. Something exists which takes chemicals and sunlight and makes form from it. That's algae, it's various things. Plankton does this at sea. Other organisms haven't the power to take chemicals and sunlight and put them together into an organism. And so they come along and eat the basic converter. And then other organisms come along and eat the lesser organisms and so on, as Dean Swift said, ad infinitum. We have then a cycle whereby man is being supported and is allied to and is dependent upon practically every form of life on Earth. Our universe at the moment, I hope it won't continue so forever. It's a very small planet. Small. I met a guy the other day that had flown around it 20 times. You can see how small it's getting. Now, here then is your staff of life operating right here in present time. You go out, you eat fish. The fish ate plankton. But that fish, by the way, is unable to feast on plankton. He has to eat a smaller fish, which eats 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 plankton. So when you... The only reason I'm bringing this up and mentioning again, it isn't mentioned in the book, that formerly, in the physical scientist who was trying to muck around in the humanities and get sense out of it, the physical scientist looked at the tooth and claw law of jungle. He looked at the life-eat-life, dog-eat-dog world, and he based his conclusions upon that observation. That this was it, and this was all there was to it, and this was the way it all worked out. So, of course, he missed the boat on ARC. Because ARC, if you will pardon the risque statement, like they say in the Life Boy ads, you're no good in bed, so you're no good. You know, are you attractive physically, they say, in the Lysol ad? Well, then your marriage will run along fine. In other words, there's the first and the second dynamic being hauled in together. And it says automatically, sexual impotency means individual incompetency. As a matter of fact, we have a whole philosophy, or whatever you call it, running through the society right now that says the only thing wrong with a man is the fact that the second dynamic is the second dynamic, is the second dynamic, is a rose, is a rose, is a rose. Of course, you can't work any aberration out of that. So they have a tough time. But that's actually, you just draw the interconnections here. Now, we'll consider this as the first dynamic. What are the ARC breaks between A... And by the way, somebody driving down the street with me the other day said, ARC. And then laughed. Was an... Arc welding. That's what we're doing, arc welding. All right. Here is your inner suppression. A's only suppress A's. R's only suppress R's. C only suppresses C. In other words, you got likes suppressing each other. Now, the A of the first dynamic gets interpolated, let us say, on the A of the first dynamic, you don't like yourself. You're your own worst enemy. That is an A in turbulence on the thing. So there is your A interaction. Now, this can be enforced or inhibited. You have to like yourself. You don't like yourself. Here's your reality. I don't know. I can't make up my mind. There is I trying to agree with I. Reality falls down between the guy, first dynamic, and his first dynamic. And C, communication. How many people haven't got any sonic? Or how many people have you run into that could hear themselves talk when you took them back down the time track but couldn't hear anybody else talk? That's an enforced first dynamic communication line. It hasn't just been left alone. It's enforced usually when it's that loopy. How many people have you taken back down the line? They never say a word. They can't pick up their own statements on the track, but they can pick up everybody else's statements on the track. There you've got a break between the first dynamic communication and the first dynamic communication. See? It's important, doesn't it? Now here's a fellow that can see everything in the picture but himself. Where's he? He's gone. That's there are actually cases like this. This is first dynamic.
The matter is in valence.
All right, let's take the first dynamic to the second dynamic. The interaction between the first and the second dynamic. A, R, C. Second dynamic. Affinity. This is rather obvious. Your affinity line for the first dynamic. A person is thought well of through the medium of the second dynamic by another person. Family, children, so on. Children like him. That's good. Children don't like him. He's told children don't like him. Starts your break off. And we just go up the line and draw these things. Work it out. It's good mental exercise. A, R, C. And it goes right on. A, R, C. A, R, C. Now this interaction of situations is all possible pleasure moments and all possible aberrations. You run it for one, the graph for one. Now you run the graph for two. Now you run the graph for three. Now you run it for four. Now you run it for five, for six, for seven. And in this society, you have to run it for eight, which is why eight is there. The reason you have to run it for eight is because the person goes out, the person's been told God made this world, and he thinks this is wonderful, and then God made this world because God was good and wanted you to be happy and so forth, and he's running on this kind of computation, coming to somebody comes along and says, this isn't God, and that cuts down the fact that it can be a good world. You see how involved it can get. So you have to run eight in any society that has a supreme being. And remember that eight has two sides. I found a terrific affinity between a guy and the devil once. It's a fact, E. Critic affinity. And another guy was scared to death, and what he was really scared of was the devil. And we finally worked it out that it was the devil, and it wasn't until we got off about 16 locks on what the devil was going to do to him that he found out that his pop was the devil. And he was the devil because in the second dynamic, Mama had ordinarily said, "You old devil, you." Yeah, right, that's a hell of a looking mess, isn't it? But those interconnective lines, I'm not asking you to digest this, all at a glimpse, but you look that thing over and think about it a little bit. You'll see, here are your pleasure moments. When was it fun to be by yourself? When was it fun to take a walk by yourself? Here's a pleasure moment. Well, the guy will think around, and all of a sudden he remembers time when it was. There was a time when he wanted to be by himself once, and so on. Now, of course, on the second, you think offhand that it's very obvious. You think, oh, well, that second, the second first, that's the end of that, and that's, we'll go on, skip the rest of it. Better know something about this graph, because the amount of suppression on the second dynamic from the third is worse than the second dynamic on the first. The suppression of the third dynamic on the second dynamic is enormous, and the suppression of the second dynamic on the third dynamic in America today is enormous. And you start looking over just this angle in your pre-clear, and if you look over just this computation, all of a sudden you're seeing a large number of possible combinations of aberration here, which you might not ordinarily think of in handling your pre-clear. You can actually figure a pre-clear out and find out where his maximum damping is. Where is dynamics maximally damped out? You find out, for instance, this person can just contact one wonderfully and just do swell on six. On three, do fair. And all of a sudden find this person is ashamed of being a man. Or a human being. This person doesn't believe in human beings. Here is four, not Galley West. And you say automatically, somebody has told him something about this. Well, that's essentially true, but you're not going to get the situation unless you start examining four against all the rest of the dynamics. And you start evaluating four as being suppressed by all the other dynamics in rotation, and each one of these by ARC, and the first thing you know, you'll pick up combinations of aberration that you really hadn't known existed. Yeah, there's some fantastic ones. You suddenly call it to the guy's attention. You don't tell him there is such a thing, but just asking, for instance, well, was there a time when you felt that human beings were going to take away what you owned? Throw them goddamn socialists. Boom! You find out Papa was a banker. And then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of stuff starts to concatenate off. Boom, 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 boom. You wouldn't have thought of that ordinarily. So you can sit there and mechanically figure out how many ways this guy is aberrated. But also you can figure out all the ways that he can have had fun. And this is more important to the people you will be processing because you have to spend more time trying to figure out where they had some fun in their lives than they'll be able to recall. You're going to have to dig for a time when this guy was able to sit down and draw a long breath and have a real pleasure moment. You running back to the time when he won the horse show. And he's receiving this cup, and there's 8,000 people present, and they're all applauding, so forth. And you say, boy, we're really going to get him through this pleasure moment, aren't you? And the guy starts to run a terror charge. You say, well, I failed on that one. Let's see. Let's take him someplace else on the track. There's quite a bit in the new book on pleasure that a couple of people have found awful. It had never struck him before that a 1.1 really gets his fun out of pulling the wings off of a little bird. Somebody shot the little bird, see, and the little bird fell down, is lying there suffering and gasping, and so you pull its wings off slow. And that was a lot of fun. I'm not kidding. You can really run pleasure moments at the band level where your preclear is. Run a 1.5, the guy somewhere along the line has been knocked down from being a 1.5 to a 1.1, see? Somewhere he's been knocked down from one to the next stage. Well, that's great. You're going to be able to find early pleasure moments where this guy got a big kick out of really getting mad. And if you can dig one of those things up, you will blow some of the suppressors that knocked him from 1.5 down to 1.1. So you see, there's more to it than meets the eye offhand. Here's, in other words, all possible pleasure moments, all possible aberrations. And I ask you to draw up yourselves, sitting around with nothing else to do, just a series of graphs on this and try to compare these against one against the other. Compare it for your own life. I think if you did it thoroughly, you'd wind up at 4-0.
What's the total number of combinations?
Total number of combinations. Of three combinations for three combinations for you. Who's going to figure this out for me? Good. It's quite a few. It's quite a few. Now, there is the latest assist that we have on straight wire. This isn't in the book. I give this to you. This is the latest assist we have on straight wire and on lock scanning.
576.
It's way up there. I assure you, you can probably find tens of thousands of locks on cases with this. You can certainly find hundreds of locks. You know, an auditor shouldn't have to sit there and use his imagination hour in and hour out, because half the time his preclear isn't going to help him out any. Now, there was hurdy-gurdy processing, straight wire, whereby you took ARC inhibition and enforcement for each person in that had been around the individual on each dynamic. It gets a little more complicated, but you still got to know something about hurdy-gurdy. Do you know anything about that system? Works pretty good. I mean, it lets you keep track of what you're doing. But this system here could be laid out in three strata. It's your tone scale again. Domination by nullification is a method of handling human beings. I dare say there are probably one or two people at present here today who have noticed this happening, domination by nullification. There may even be somebody here today that has had it pulled on him. The theory behind domination by nullification is a very simple one. The individual who pulls it considers himself so powerless that he has to make the individual with whom he's associating completely powerless in order to associate further. This is a very short-term method of committing suicide, because you start pulling people down the tone scale, and as a person goes down the tone scale, they become more and more and more dangerous. An apathy case is a very dangerous individual to have around, but not terribly active, so we really don't worry about him. I suppose one of your highest levels of dangerousness would be overt dangerousness is your grief case. You keep pushing a person down to grief, and this person keeps going down to the point where they're going to kill you too, with tears. Well, this is the coward doing it with a kiss. Domination by nullification. That is ARC inhibited. That's pretty low on the tone scale. That's down around 1-1 and down. 1-2, something like that, and down. Domination by inhibition. So the fellow says, you can't look at that, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and there is no reality, and all is hopeless, and there is no future, and there is no mess, and there is no time track, and oh, poor me, and I would love to do that, but I hate to have to tell you this, but people have been saying about you that 1-1, 0-5, so on. Now, right above this is your enforced band. Domination, outright, forthright, domination by force. Here's where you get ARC enforced. You've got to listen to me. Okay? You've got to look. Other intelligent statements. That's enforced ARC. Now, up here is ARC neither inhibited or enforced, but merely pointed out or existing, which is pleasure moments. So you've got here 1-3 levels. So don't look at hurdy-gurdy or this type of auditing, straight wire, as being something different, because it isn't. Here is any straight wire or any lock scanning or any situation is where ARC and their what they group into, which is understanding, inhibited. Here it is, dominated, and here is ARC enhanced. Other people, groups, so forth, make pleasure available without forcing it on the individual. That should tell you also something about how to give somebody a good time. You don't force one on them. This system should point out to you a lot of holes in cases that might be overlooked unless you were going at it systematically. You should, if you're working a pre-clear over a long period of time, you should definitely do one of these checks on them. Find out what dynamics are suppressing what dynamics, and then start to take it apart. The first thing you know, some of the strangest computations will come out of this guy's life. You don't have to think them up first, which is the beauty of it. Because in order to think up all the strange computations that this fellow would have, and all the inhibitions, and all the enforcements, and all of this, and all of that, you'd have to be that guy, and it's bad practice to keep shifting valence and being the pre-clear. It's a strain on the auditor. Well, I hope this afternoon has had a small factor, too, which you can use. I know that you will have probably a lot of questions about this one way or the other. I'm sure they can be taken up adequately in the seminars. The seminar leaders, I would like very much to give me any interesting question or any general question or any super unresolved question after it has been thrashed out, if it's still in that status. Give it to me tomorrow, and I will take those up during tomorrow afternoon's session. And I wish to thank you very much for your good attention this afternoon.